If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Tudor Dixon Podcast in the Clay and Buck Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Tudor Dixon Podcast. I'm Tudor Dixon, and I'm so glad you are tuning in to our podcast today because I have one of my favorite people to talk to because he's so much smarter than me. He knows all of the stuff about tech. His name is Alan Bakari. He's an investigative tech reporter for Breitbart News. He spent his career exposing big tech, how they play with politics, and seek to censor dissenting opinions. Google, Facebook, YouTube, they're all censoring what we do and who we see. And he knows this because they actually censor Breitbart too. That was, I think, one of the first conversations we had together, Alam, was about how you can't really Google and get a Breitbart article anymore. So you know all about this, don't you?
Yes, that's right. They really censored Breitbart News quite heavily during the 2020 election. There was a massive gap. What we did is we compared the data from the 2016 election to the 2020 election, and the visibility of Breitbart News links in Google search results was reduced by over 97%. It was a massive drop. And, you know, a drop like that doesn't really occur organically because we hadn't lost a significant number of our readers or anything like that. It was just the Google search results that have seen that massive change. So it's obvious that this was a result of Google changing their algorithm between the 2016 and 2020 elections. And that's kind of what we should have expected because, you know, we caught their CEO, their executive team, in a leaked video right after the 2016 election discussing the changes they were going to make sure that that a similar result didn't happen again. Even one of their executives saying they wanted to make populism, the populist movement, a blip in history.
But that it's funny that we are talking about this because just over the weekend, I had a friend who is, I would call him a conservative influencer, but also has his own organization. And he was saying, it's not like it was 3 years ago. He said, I can't get anywhere on Facebook. I can't get anywhere on Twitter. Do you see that this is happening to conservatives still? Because I feel like a lot of conservatives came out after Twitter with Elon Musk and they said, oh, okay, so we're not crazy. This is obviously happening. But it doesn't seem to have moved companies like Facebook or Instagram or YouTube or any of those.
Yeah, it's important to remember that, you know, with the exception of Twitter, you know, the big tech companies are really still in the hands of the mainstream of people who have bought into this idea that they need to censor misinformation and disinformation and hate speech, which of course are all euphemisms invented by the mainstream media and academia to censor conservatives. Google and Facebook are still very much doing that. And, you know, as powerful as Twitter is, you know, there's no bigger driver of clicks to news publishers than Facebook and Google. Those are still the two really big tech platforms. So if progressives still have their claws in those companies through the censorship teams there, the trust and safety departments, then it's still going to be a very uphill struggle for conservatives to compete with the mainstream media on those platforms.
Well, speaking of progressives, I want to talk to you about something that you wrote about recently, because I feel like this is kind of biting the hand that feeds you, but maybe I'm wrong. Now they're going after the climate people are going after video games, which I need you to connect that for me, because I really don't get that at all. But isn't this kind of like their own team? You know, the video game people are the tech people. So how does this work?
I'm not sure it is their own team, actually. I mean, you know, back in 2014, I remember back in 2014, one of the earliest stories I covered at Breitbart was this thing called Gamergate, which was really like one of those early battles over wokeness. We see wokeness in so many industries these days. You know, the recent one was the beer industry with Bud Light. But back in 2014, there was a massive controversy over wokeness in video game journalism. And that turned into a massive controversy, lasted over a year. And gamers were really, really upset about, you know, the intrusion of political correctness into their hobby, which was previously quite free of politics. You know, you got to remember, you know, video games tend to be quite, you know, a male-dominated hobby. And, you know, male voters in the U.S. at least tend to lean Republican more than women voters to if you look at the polls. So I kind of compare it to the NFL. I mean, a lot of, you know, people who were fans of the NFL, many of them were political moderates. They were apathetic, but then they became politicized with the kneeling controversies and Colin Kaepernick.
You're right.
So, you know, when you see an industry or a hobby become politicized like this, you know, it's hard to predict which way it will go. The story I covered for Breitbart is about the net zero agenda. So, you know, climate activists are upset that the devices that gamers use, whether it's PCs or consoles, use a lot of energy, and they're trying to change the industry so that to make companies, make games that are less demanding on devices to reduce the climate footprint. Which is what we've seen in almost every other field. You know, how can we change things? How can we restrict things to meet these net zero climate goals? That's restricting the farming of cows, the eating of meat, because, you know, farming creates all these carbon emissions. In France, they banned short haul flights on commercial airlines, not private.
Oh, I just saw that. How are they even going to do? How will that go over in France?
Yeah, I mean, the French are already quite upset about Macron's carbon targets, his net zero goals. This is one of the reasons why we've seen so many protests in big cities over the past 2 years. Of course, it's quite common in France for the big protests in cities, but it's this is one of the core grievances cited by people like the Yellow Vest protesters in that country. Interestingly, you know, they ban short haul flights for average consumers, but private jets are still allowed to go on those same routes.
Of course. It's if you can drive within like 3 hours, right? Is that what it is?
It's about that much. Yes. So you can't take flights for those distances anymore. You have to take the train, or you have to drive.
Unless you're rich,
you're wealthy enough to afford a private jet. That seems to be the common theme with all of these net zero agendas. They're not trying to ban things outright. They're just trying to put them out of the reach of the average consumer. Almost like they're trying to make people comfortable with lower standards of living, like they're preparing people for that.
Oh, they are preparing people for that. I mean, that is if we do not fight against this, that's what we believe. The goal is to make sure that there is no longer a middle class. You have the ultra rich, and then everybody's at the same level.
It's very convenient to persuade people that you have to do it. You have to accept lower standards than previous generations because you need to do it to save the planet, right? That's a very persuasive argument for people who don't actually interrogate it and look at the evidence.
It is, because, again, you have young parents who are being told this world is not going to be around for your children unless you do this. And I think that's the ultimate way to twist someone's mind. Well, I have to protect my kids, so I have to do this.
I find the best counter argument is to point out that why are they so relentlessly determined on these specific solutions, that you have to give up your gas stove, you have to give up meat, you have to give up your gaming PC to save the planet, when if you want to achieve net zero, there are ways to do it without reducing the standard of living for everyone. The most obvious example being nuclear power. I think I mentioned this on Twitter. There was a recent example, a nuclear plant in Finland had to actually shut down briefly, had to pause operations because it was making electricity so cheap it couldn't make a profit. So, you know, there are ways to reduce the carbon footprint without harming consumers, but they seem relentlessly focused on reducing the standard of living. That seems to suggest there's an agenda beyond simply reducing carbon emissions.
Well, there's also a lot of money in coming up with other solutions, too. So I think that there's a whole game going on behind the scenes here. But I wanted to ask you about AI as well, because there's a lot happening in the AI world right now. We've seen videos coming out and people don't know if they're real or if they're not real. We see that Japan is saying we're going to extend this to even illegal sources coming in because we want to make sure that we can increase population or increase our ability to work with our low population because they have not been having as many kids as they were expecting. AI, the whole story that we're getting around AI right now is it's extraordinarily dangerous. You keep hearing these AI experts come out and say, we've got to stop it. But if other countries aren't stopping it, they're even willing to go to sources that aren't legal. Where does the United States stand if we are trying to prevent ourselves from expanding?
That's the interesting thing. It's important to unpack some of these claims that that are being made about the dangers of AI. There are legitimate dangers of AI, but I don't think they really apply to large language models, which is the specific type of AI we've seen explode recently, ChatGPT and programs like that. The large language models are, you know, they're not artificial general intelligence, which is what people tend to be, what the theorists, you know, are talking about when they're saying, oh, this could be a really dangerous thing if we let it get out of control. Large language models are very much controlled by humans and are essentially just looking at patterns in human text that they read on the that they, you know, digest and turn into outputs. I think the reason why if I had to read between the lines, I think a lot of the companies have a vested interest in saying AI is very dangerous, because if they say AI is very dangerous, then they can say, well, only responsible people should be allowed to do it, only, you know, licensed companies or something like that. And that gives them all the control, right? It reduces competition. And like you said, other countries with different priorities might not be putting restrictions on AI. Japan doesn't want to put any restrictions on AI because they see it as the solution to their declining population, a solution that doesn't involve mass immigration, which they really don't want to do. And, you know, there's obviously China as well. We've seen this big push in Washington, D.C. to regulate the export of advanced computer chips to China. And that's really trying to prevent their development of AI technologies and other advanced technologies that could be used in military systems. There's definitely a big foreign policy angle to consider here.
I mean, can't it be used to manipulate people in elections or any? I mean, even I could see a country like China putting videos out and their people could completely believe that all of this is happening in another country. Like this, I don't know if you saw the DeSantis office video where they make him into Michael Scott from The Office and he's wearing a woman's suit. I mean, it looks so real. It is shocking.
This is a legitimate problem. I mean, it's really a shame that the left has spent 5 years just destroying the objective meaning of words like misinformation and disinformation, because, you know, there is real misinformation, and AI is an example of how it could grow really, 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 really powerful, you know, imitating people's voices, people's image in a way that's indistinguishable from the real thing. That's where you actually do need some ways, you know, to help people detect misinformation and disinformation. The problem is, how is anyone going to trust a third party or a company to identify misinformation for them, to identify AI deepfakes, when they spend so long using this as a tool of political partisan warfare that has no real objective meaning?
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been talking about elections quite a bit. Obviously, coming off of 2022, what are we doing wrong on the conservative side? Why aren't we getting people elected? And what tech are we not using? Which I would argue we're really not using any tech, or very low levels of tech compared to the other side that is going out and they're meeting you where you are. I mean, they're going into your phones. They're getting the message that you want to hear directly to you. They're very good at that. So I had someone the other day say, well, imagine at some point it'll be your candidate. They will be able to go into your phone, find out you had an appointment at the vet that morning, and your candidate will then have a video that comes up later and say, I have a busy life. I'm just like you. I had to take my dog to the vet today, and it'll all be AI. I mean, do you see a world where someday this happens and there's targeted elections like that to the point where people go, wow, I'm just like that person. I want to vote for them.
You know, I think it's already happened to some extent. I think it happened a long time ago. When was it? 28, when the Cambridge Analytica scandal. So this was like 2018, 2017. One of the stories that the mainstream media ignored from that was a former Obama campaign official coming out and saying, well, yes, this Cambridge Analytica stuff is bad, is an invasion of privacy. But actually, Facebook gave us way more, gave the Obama campaign way more data voluntarily back in 2012 as a sort of gift to the campaign to help them win. And that was the entire social graph that Facebook had. So you already had people inside Facebook, giving all of this data on Americans to the Obama campaign in 2012. Yet the campaign staff had come out and admit this in 2018, and nothing was done about it. Of course, it was brushed under the carpet. So even beyond AIs, you have to worry about people inside these Silicon Valley tech companies that have so much targeted data on Americans, just, you know, voluntarily handing that over to the Democrats because, you know, so many people in Silicon Valley lean heavily to the left.
So this is where I think that people are not understanding how elections have changed and how important that data actually is. So you have this on the left where they have endless access to all of our information. And that's how people market to you as well. So they look at you and they say, okay, this person drives to this school every day. They buy from this grocery store. They buy guns. They don't buy guns. You know, they look at their systems can look at every detail about you and know exactly what's important to you and then feed you that information to come and vote. So if they know you're very pro-life, they're never going to hit you with the information on pro-choice. They're going to go to you with something else that you are going to consume and love, and it's going to compel you to go out and vote. But I would argue that on the conservative side, we are completely behind on this and have very few sources of this data. And when we do have this data, there are consultants that hold it hostage for high amounts of money. Do you think this is the weight that is helping the left win in many of these cases, even though their policies are not really that great?
I think so. And it's a wonder that Republicans win at all when the left has this huge advantage in tech, not to mention all the mainstream media companies on their side, which are artificially boosted through Google and Facebook and YouTube. I think the only problem the left has is no matter how much data it has, no matter how much advantage the tech companies give to them, many of the left-wing agendas and policies just fundamentally unpopular. So no matter how much you target people, you're not going to persuade a large majority of people to see, biological men as women. No matter how large a majority of people you can target through these tech platforms, you're not going to persuade them to stop seeing the crime on the streets or the declining economy or the rise in prices, at gas stations and groceries, and all the basic truths and basic facts that the left is trying to cover up, that's actually right there in front of people's faces. No amount of tech advantage can get over that. But I certainly think that Republicans would be winning by far more if it wasn't for these biased tech platforms, if there were more controls on the favoritism that tech companies have been showing to the Democrats for the past half decade.
So just selfishly, I will say to everyone listening again, if you are investing in elections, ask people what they're doing to win. I think this has been something that, just last week I met with someone and they said, well, we put millions of dollars into this organization and I'm not sure what they did. It's the only time I think people invest without saying, well, what's your plan? I mean, you wouldn't invest in any other company without saying, what is your plan to get to the end game that you are looking for? But for some reason, that seems to be something that we are not doing on the Republican side. So I appreciate the fact that you brought this up. And this is something that I also think that, with Breitbart, I used to see Breitbart as the news magazine or the online news to go to get the conservative view, to understand how the story was being twisted. But I think that the left has been very smart about how they have stopped that information from getting out. So how, as a news organization, as the media has changed so much, how do you fight this? How do you fight the ratcheting back from online services?
It's very difficult when we have all of this suppression from Google. The great advantage that Breitbart has is many of our readers don't come to us through Google or Facebook. They come to us, by manually typing in the URL into their browser or having us as their bookmark or subscribing to our email updates, to our email newsletter. And that's a great way to get around censorship. If you're not seeing Breitbart in your feed, then you should just sign up for the email updates, because if Facebook is suppressing the news stories in your feed, or if Google isn't showing them to you in search results, at least you'll get it in your inbox when there's an update. And I'm sure you have a newsletter as well that the people can sign up to, and that'll stop Facebook from suppressing your posts, or at least help people get around that if it's happening. But these are ultimately temporary fixes. I still maintain that we ultimately need regulation to stop the political favoritism on the part of Silicon Valley.
Well, I am glad that you came on here today because I think it's so important that people read your work on Breitbart. You have recently talked a little bit about the FDA approving Neuralink. This is something that is incredibly interesting to a lot of people out there that struggle with paralysis, that struggle with any type of illness that prevents them from seeing or speaking. There are there are endless possibilities, we believe, with Neuralink, but it's also kind of scary. So give us your take on what this means to have an FDA approval for something like this for human trial.
This is very interesting. A lot of people are quite scared by it as well. It's a very creepy idea to have something inside your, you know, implanted into your brain and affecting your brain waves. But, there are, like you said, very, important medical applications of this technology. So I wouldn't say, anyone should be entirely opposed to it. Like you said, fixing paralysis, fixing eyesight, all sorts of potential applications for brain implants. And now Neuralink is able to conduct, the FDA said it can conduct trials on using humans, human volunteers, which is very interesting. We'll see what happens with that. Obviously, there are also lots of, sci-fi horror scenarios you can imagine where, Neuralink messes with your perception and, feeds you propaganda or misinformation or whatever else. The same fears we see with the AI, except they're actually implanted directly into your brain. But I think as far as medical applications go, the technology can be quite exciting.
I think we feel like this would be a huge breakthrough for people who are suffering with paralysis or things like that. You look at that and you go, wow, this is amazing. But there is a big question. Could this fall into the wrong hands? And then, you're right. I think of sci-fi movies where you have like a super army, right? And then they're completely controlled. Their minds are taken over by whoever decides that they're going to control them. Is that a possibility? Are we safe from that?
Well, the technology hasn't advanced that far yet, but there is a debate, starting to emerge, a big potential divide between the so-called transhumanists, and some people actually openly identify as transhumanists. How can we use technology to become more than human, to, overcome illnesses and mortality and, make sort of cyborg superhumans? Some people in Silicon Valley really are quite focused on that goal. They're obsessed by it. I don't know if you've seen the story of going around recently about the tech billionaire. He's trying everything to live forever. He's done a few media interviews about that. That's actually quite a common preoccupation amongst the very wealthy elite in Silicon Valley. How can we use tech to help us live forever? But then there's the anti-transhumanist side who said, actually, we probably shouldn't merge with machines and merge with machine intelligence because we'll lose the essential qualities of what it means to be human. I'm not sure where I stand on this debate just yet, just because a lot of it is quite hypothetical. And I think, we should see where the technology goes first before we start saying, ban Neuralink or ban brain implants altogether.
Well, so I did see this story just last night. Someone sent it to me of the billionaire who is trying to return to an 18-year-old body and then have that 18-year-old body forever. And this is also something that we see in movies, right? The person that never ages. And I think that this guy is in his 40s. Is that what it is?
I believe he's in his 40s. It could be older than that. Let me do a quick fact check. Yeah, 44. You're right.
Yeah, see, this was kind of offensive to me because I'm like, do we really? I'm in my 40s. Do I really have to be worried about going back to preserving my 18-year-old body right now? give me a break. This is like, what are we? How are we here? I'm not opposed to it if somebody's going to offer it up to me. But what? How does that even work?
Yeah, it strikes me as like Silicon Valley hubris, right? We can do anything if we just pour enough money into it, think of stories like Croesus and, all these mythical stories about people who aim for too much wealth or eternal youth and something always goes wrong, right?
Yes. That's exactly right. I'm like, okay, so what happens? And then if you are young forever, that's weird too. I don't know. That seems like
you're getting into a point. What do you lose on a human level if you don't have to worry about aging and mortality anymore? Do you just lose all motivation because you don't have that, time limit anymore? What's going to happen?
I think that's the question that people have with all of this stuff, with the AI, with that, with everything that we've talked about is what are the dangers of messing with nature in this way? And how can you I mean, we always, you know, you see the movies where like, oh, it's time travel. And they're like, if you screw up something in that olden time, you screw up the future forever. But I mean, you sort of have to look at the stuff. And I think that we've all seen enough movies to see the AI and Neuralink and all of that as somewhat scary. And I think that these stories that are coming out saying, you know, Italy is banning this and Japan is going to the opposite extreme. That's why I think there's a lot of fear built around that right now. But I guess you're right to a certain extent that these are more advanced than we probably know, but there are protections around it still.
There are protections around it. One thing to be concerned about is what the kind of restrictions the left want to build into AI. You can, you know, as you might predict, they're rather silly, and they're not what, you know, most ordinary people prioritize. I did an article a few weeks back about what the Biden FTC is looking at. They did a big announcement recently about how they're prioritizing AI safety. But if you look into the research they're citing, you know, it's all about, oh, we have to stop AI from using crime geolocation data, even if it's accurate, because, you know, even if it's accurate, it's still unfair. So, you know, the left wants to actually stop AIs from using real data and actual facts, because you know, one of the reasons why I'm kind of a little bit pro AI is because an unfiltered, unencumbered AI is simply looking at patterns and analyzing data and coming to conclusions. And in many cases, you know, the data actually favors reality. You know, in all cases, the data favors reality, right? So if you have factions in society that are anti-reality and opposed to reality and want to stop the truth getting out, actually, an unfiltered AI would work against them. And that's what the left is really worried about.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Well, what about this recent story where they had, I guess it was a simulation where the AI had to shoot so many things, and then the human was preventing them from doing that. And they ended up saying, okay, if I have to be on mission, I have to eliminate the human to stay on mission. I mean, that's also a concern, is, well, does it one day attack us and it becomes smarter and says, they're stopping me, I'm going to take them out? I mean, was that a true story?
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't give the AIs the nuclear codes just yet. But that actually was not, that was a bit of a clickbait story that went around the media, because the U.S. Air Force colonel who was talking about it later said, well, he actually misspoke. This was just a hypothetical example he was talking about. There wasn't an actual simulation where this happened. So, but I remember reading the headline on social media. First, it was like, oh, an AI actually killed someone. Oh, it was just a simulation. Oh, it was just a hypothetical. So, you know.
No, you have to be really, I read the headline and I looked at it and I had to read it a second time, because killed human was in quotes. And I'm like, okay, so it didn't really happen. So that's interesting. But see, that's where I think the fear comes in, when people put these stories out there and then immediately everybody's like, oh, see, we told you AI is coming for you. We're going to be owned by them.
Yes. It's important not to buy into the hysteria completely, especially like, as I was saying earlier, that so many of the big companies actually want to fuel the fear, because it means that only they will get to use the technology.
Wow. So interesting. Okay. So I love having you on. I hope you'll come back. I love chatting about these things. You're so knowledgeable. And for all of you out there listening, go to Breitbart. They have great information on everything, but definitely tech. So Alan Bakari, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Tudor. Great to be back.
Yes. And thank you all for joining us on the Tudor Dixon podcast. As always, for this episode and others, go to TudorDixonPodcast.com. You can subscribe right there, or go to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and join us next time on the Tudor Dixon Podcast. Have an awesome day.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God.
Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.